Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to Artists Helping Artists. We are the number one art show on Blog Talk Radio. This is Leslie Seda. I am in Texas, and my co-host, Margaret Sheldon, is in Boston and is on the line. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm well. You know, I've been doing a bit of traveling lately and painting
a
lot.
You have.
So, yeah, all's well in the world. All's well. How about you?
I'm impressed. It's been crazy. You know what? Every time you ask me this question, I have the exact same answer. What is with me? Work is really good. I have been incredibly busy in a good way. I'm working with a ton of brands right now. And it's just, I feel like I'm at that point where all my really hard work is starting to really pay off. But, you know, you'd think I would be smarter and not working harder and have a pint at that point. But it is my goal. I promise.
I know.
And, no, it's really crazy, but it's really good. It's really good. I've learned even more about Instagram. And after you chat for a second, I want to just share one thing that I really learned last week. Which was a good thing. And I can't believe it took me this long to figure it out. But no, it's good. How about you? You've been painting a lot. What have you been painting?
Oh, well, let's see. Well, last week I was on Monhegan Island, which for anyone that doesn't know, you should Google it. Monhegan has a ton of history. It's a small island 12 miles, I believe, out off the shore of Maine. So, you know, you drive up to this charming little town, and you think, oh, I'm so excited to be here, only to realize you still have to get all of your stuff boarded on a ferry, not a big ferry.
mm-hmm.
You get wet. It's that small a ferry. You know, all of your belongings have to be in Tupperware bins.
Where did you stay?
We rented a house. There are house
rentals. Oh, okay.
There's also
Got a big,
you know, sort of classic New England inn right on the island. And then there's a smaller hotel. So there are options, but you pack in your food, you bring your clothes, your art supplies, and, you know, you're kind of – there's no cars, Leslie. There are no cars.
And very little cell service. Or internet. We know that.
Very little. Which, you know, I have to say, freaks me out at first. Oh, my gosh, I can't see my email, go on to Instagram, check my voicemail. And then after about 2.5 days, you're like, ugh, who cares? What blessed relief to be away from that. So,
awesome.
Lots of good painting, lots of good history. Saw some incredible art while we were there because the island artists all open up their studios. And it was just, you know, it's wonderful. All I can say is there's a lot of really good hiking trails, and for some very convenient reason, they all end very near the Monhegan Brewery, which is a small microbrewery on the island. And that seems to be much appreciated by all of the hikers, art lovers, and I guess nature seekers out there. So it was a great week. It was a week of, you know,
wow,
productivity and
good
inspiration.
Good for you.
Yeah.
That is fantastic.
Everyone waits.
Well,
Jamie
on the other hand,
lives on the island. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Go ahead.
Got it.
Yeah.
That's very, very impressive. Well, I was just telling Margaret that a very silly thing I talked about on Instagram for about a week. One night I was at my home at like midnight. I had the TV on. I was working because I work late every night usually. And I look over, and in the kitchen there's a rat standing right there, like looking at me. And I pick up my shoe and I fling it at him, and he runs and goes under the dishwasher. And I'm like, are you kidding me? So I could hear him for a while. And so I was talking to my girlfriend the next day, and I was like, you know, I had this really crazy idea, but I'm very tempted to share this on Instagram. She's like, whoa, are you sure? And I said, it's one of those real life things that I'm sure people have to deal with. So I made the decision to do that, and primarily because I just figured the thing I don't like about Instagram is how in the home decor community, which is kind of now what I'm in, is everyone looks like they have these perfect lives. If you got a rat sitting there staring at you from your kitchen, you don't have a perfect kitchen. I can tell you that right now. So I shared it, and my son, who's living with us for the summer, took it upon himself to try to come up with rat traps to be able to catch and release, which is a whole nother topic. My humanitarian son, as I called him. And so he was making these Rube Goldberg style rat traps. What were you going to say, Margaret?
Well, wait a second. I have to tell you, when my daughter moved into her first apartment in New York City a couple of years ago, she rigged up. I recognized it. I knew that whole compound bucket water thing.
Oh, that's
because
hysterical.
That's what they did to catch mice. I knew where you were coming from. So go ahead, because it was so much fun to watch.
Well, this is how much fun it was to watch. In a 6-day period, my impressions, which is how many times someone looked at my account, went up by 1 million. I'm like, what?
God.
And I had like 2,700 DMs that I answered over a period of time. And the whole thing was crazy. And that darn rat, which I'm using singular term, but I probably shouldn't. We did finally call a professional, and that's what it took. So, but we've, So anyway, the biggest problem
was
in our basement, which we had a feeling was the case. Yeah. And it's just, what I learned is Instagram stories is the best place for you to really share things in depth. And I probably had half the DMs from people saying, why am I so invested in your darn rat? I wake up in the morning, and if you don't have anything posted, and I mean, it's crazy. And so I just realized that there are a ton of people who use Instagram stories, and they do so successfully, and they drive traffic. And what happens is all those people, when they're interested in, God forbid, your rat, will then hop over onto your Instagram account and look and comment and become a fan. But the biggest thing I learned is when you post an Instagram story is don't post it right then. I save them all. So even if I save 10 in a row, I'd save them all. I'd go back and watch it, and then I would write on my screen like a little synopsis or something funny about what I just said. And the reason why you do that is think about how many times you watch Instagram stories with no sound. It's really, really common. So if you write a little commentary for each screen, it's like one sentence. Then people will see that and they'll get interested and they'll keep watching it, or they'll tap on the screen so they can listen to it. And that one, change has been dramatic. And all it means is understand that people often watch Instagram stories with no sound. And because most times you have to tap it to get the sound, just because, so if you're in your office and you turn it on, you're not embarrassed. But if you type a little sentence or two on each screen, that's a little bit of a commentary. So someone who's not listening to it, it keeps people's attention. It then gets them to listen to the sound, and it just kind of grabs them. And so if you're doing, a painting demo, plein air, they can watch and see. But if you type a few things down there, either about, what you're talking about, or you kind of summarize, it just gives them more information, and they're more likely to watch all of your stories instead of swiping through to the next one from someone else. So that's my big
tip.
Well,
you just described me. I never have the sound on.
Yeah.
And you're absolutely right. I read the comments, and I'd laugh.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, your rat saga was fun. It was really fun.
And we did end up hiring a professional, and the rat and his family and friends got caught. So, it's over, I'm pleased to say.
Good.
Who would have ever known?
No more rats. Yeah.
But I'll tell you a funny thing. I check into my hotel in Waco, and the manager comes out and goes, did you get the rat? And the woman next to her who works for the hotel looked at her and said, she has a rat in her room here? And the manager follows me on Instagram and was referred to my house.
Oh, that's so great.
But anyway.
You see, the reach is,
I know.
The reach is wide. Yeah. Well,
yeah,
I'm glad
crazy.
You got him, and I'm glad you're anyway, I guess you're under control again.
But important
that's a good
lesson,
thing.
Very important lesson to learn. Okay, so I wanted to mention today's show. It's called How to Get Past the Fear of Failure. And I guarantee every single person listening to this show has at some point in time dealt with this. And I can specifically think of one time when I was teaching a lot and I woke up one morning and I thought, who the heck am I to think that I could teach an abstract class? What? And it was just like complete like doubt, everything. And it was a really weird feeling. I felt like I was like living this life and faking it. And so Margaret put this together, and I'm going to let her do the intro, but boy, we've all been there in one form or another.
I know. And the problem is it gets in the way of enjoying everything, enjoying your art, enjoying your life. I mean, this is just, it's a universal thing, but we all need to recognize it and figure out how to just get by it. I think that's the best approach. So I want to give credit to some of the, I guess, the influences on this particular topic. And one is that I am not as faithful a listener to this particular podcast called Gold Diggers, but I try to listen to Jenna Kutcher, that's Kutcher, every now and then, because she talks a lot about sort of being an entrepreneur, being a small business owner, sort of being a creative.
Mm-hmm.
And I always get something from her topics or her guests. And the other is an online, sort of I guess it's a blog, but, you know, it's a site called The Muse. And it's really interesting. It's written by a woman named Melody Wilding. And, boy, it was as if, as I was sort of putting this together, I thought, as if she read my mind. So I want to give credit to both of those as being sort of real-life influences, not to mention the things that I've observed in everyday life. For whatever reason, I run into people all the time. And I mean artists of every level of accomplishment and experience, all artists. And, you know, everybody feels really fortunate to be able to do something that they love. But I have to say, you know, you've got to be careful here, because giving luck all the credit just gives it more power than it deserves. I know I found that quote. I didn't realize it was Thomas Jefferson, but I did a search because there's a quote about the harder I work, the luckier I get. I think that is so true, because if you're an artist, results are the product of hard work and really, you know, the time you spend at the easel. So today I want to talk about sort of the fear and insecurity and really the fear of failure, and maybe it's a lot about self-doubt too. Here's the bottom line, and it's so funny because Leslie and I were talking about the definition of imposter syndrome. That's what it's about. I think almost every artist, and I mean everyone, has either felt this or witnessed it in other people. And it's because artists, I don't know, maybe by our nature, feel a little, at some level, insecure, inadequate, maybe, incompetent. I don't know what it is, but everyone fears failure, even if they have all this evidence of success around them. You know, it feels like the person is always sort of not only questioning their ability, but kind of like they get to the point, they can get frozen, and they start feeling like, oh, I don't want to paint, or they dread the next brush stroke. They're not anxious to share their work. You know, they sort of avoid feedback, and it can really play a number on your head. It gets you assuming everything is negative. I've seen people who avoid painting in front of others because if they feel like if their painting isn't amazing, they'll be, you know, their secret will be discovered. they'll be found out. They won't paint public, and they do everything. It's almost as if they sabotage themselves. And I'll tell you, it can really affect other artists who are around that.
Sure.
I found something by a researcher, and I think we'll go through these. And her name is Dr. Valerie Young. She's done a ton of research and says that there are five different sort of personality types who fall under the spell of, it must be called imposter syndrome. And we're going to talk about the sort of types of insecurities today, and then I think we're going to do our best to give you some ideas of ways to overcome it.
One thing I want to mention before we get into the imposter syndrome is there might be some people listening to this show thinking, I don't feel that way. You know, I'm doing fine. And
good.
Here's what I think people don't realize. The fear of failure often prevents you from taking the next step. So you may not wake up and be doubting yourself and terrified, but in the back of your mind, you may have that fear of failure, and that's why you're not approaching the gallery. Or that's why you're not entering an exhibition. So even if on a day-to-day basis you feel pretty confident, you may also have that fear of reaching to the next level. So it doesn't matter whether it's in your face every day or it's kind of out there and it's preventing you from, you know, doing some things that perhaps you could do. I just want to make sure you realize that that fear of failure comes in a lot of different ways. And
it sure does. Yeah.
It's not a bad thing. When you have a job where you have to actually create the product that you're selling and it's something that comes from your heart, it's a really difficult process. And thing about painting is not every single time you put the brush on the canvas is it brilliant in your mind. So you're always going to have doubts. And there's so many things, as we know, that go into reasons why it's not working on your easel. It could be, you know, stress at home. I mean, we've talked about that on so many different shows. So what we're trying to do today is kind of explain a little bit why this happens and make everybody realize that everyone goes through this. And it's sometimes you just have to kind of step back and get a reality check, but realize that it's okay and you don't need to doubt yourself. Does that make sense?
Yes, 100%.
Okay. Okay, so the first kind of imposter in this imposter syndrome is the perfectionist. And typically, I know, it's a bad thing. No, but typically the perfectionist has come to art from a different field of study. So, you know, it's where you've had great success in your former job. And so the uncertainty of art is hard for you to kind of grasp, despite your love of art. And so the thing about being an artist is it's not like you're a stockbroker, and if you make a good trade that day, you're successful. It's a little bit different way of measuring success as an artist. And it may take you a long time before you, quote unquote, sell a painting. And if that's your level of success and you're a perfectionist to get it right, you're going to constantly kind of block your own way to success. So if you see yourself in this profile of someone who, I always want it to be better and I'm never really getting there. You need to kind of release from your old life and your old job. And you'll see later on in the show, we're going to give you some tips on how you're going to enjoy, you know, the time for making art and finding new ways to measure your success. But it's not as cut and dry in being an artist in perhaps trying to get everything perfect. Because here's the thing.
Yeah.
One painting to one person is kind of puzzling. Another painting to another person is the most incredible thing they've ever seen. And yet the person next to them may feel exactly the opposite about those two. There is really nothing out there that says this painting is perfect and this painting is not. It doesn't work that way when you're an artist. So you have to be able to understand that there's different interpretations. So if you're spending all your time trying to get it perfect may not be the right goal, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
It just doesn't work that way when you're an artist.
As you were saying that, I was thinking, boy, you know, when you're working sort of in any sort of a typical career, you have things like performance reviews,
where
you get kudos. from your boss, you get raises, you know, there's all, you get promotions.
Top salesperson.
It really is so different.
Yeah.
Right? If only we could give ourselves an attaboy, attagirl on the back. But
I know.
Most of us probably
totally different.
We would get the source, wouldn't we?
And
right.
It goes back to that old premise, Margaret, of enjoy.
What?
It's about the journey and not the destination. And if you're always trying to always be perfect and perfect, you're losing complete sight of the fact that it's the journey that is what's supposed
right.
to enjoy and how you're supposed to get there. So
I bet that's really a hard leap from someone who in another area of their life has always been able to be the best, you know, in such a measurable way. I guess we just have to accept that as artists, measuring that success has to come from somewhere else. Maybe, I don't know, from satisfaction. So,
yeah.
All right. The second type of person that kind of struggles with this is deigned the superhero. Now, this doesn't mean that they themselves are superheroes, but it means that they're in the category of people who freeze up. They typically don't know how to answer the question, you know, that's asked when someone says, oh, what do you do? Because someone in this category, unless they have super success, they automatically default to the fact that they think perhaps that means they're a failure. You know, this is interesting because we've all met people who choke on the word. They don't want to say that they're an artist because they think that belongs to someone else, someone who's got, you know, more measurable success, greater notoriety, maybe someone who has a degree should be able to call themselves an artist, but not me.
Right.
The superhero type assumes that only others who sort of, as they assume, are born, you know, with superpowers, great artistic gifts, only they should be able to be called artists. And I think, for me, this is someone who really needs to become more attuned to their own validation. Do you know what I mean? You need to decide for yourself and have that. We all know this is hard, but I truly believe sometimes fake it till you make it work. Like, you need to tell yourself you're doing this because you got to be able to nurture yourself. No one else is going to do it. And I think that assuming everyone else is more talented is a big mistake. If I've said one thing over and over to people that are starting out, I think the commitment starts by identifying yourself as an artist, if that's what it is you want to be known as. Like, no one bestows a title on you. Yeah. What?
I remember the first time I told someone I was an artist, I kind of gasped. I was like, oh, I guess I am now because I said it. But
I guess
you're
exactly
totally right. Yeah,
I guess I am because I said it. Oh, boy.
Isn't that funny?
So,
that's what I thought.
That's something And isn't it funny how hard it is to choke that word out because you just assume that, I don't know, it's like maybe you need to be knighted in order to have the title across your chest. But it's true. It's like once you make this commitment and then you – did you relax after you started to call yourself – artist? Did it come easier for you, Leslie?
I think I had, it was kind of like when you keep having to say the same thing over and over so you'll believe it. And I think when I finally told someone I was an artist, I was like, oh yeah, I'm an artist. But I have a better example. Okay, so as you know, I've kind of derailed my art career for the last 2 years doing this other thing. And people say, what do you do? And I'm like, I'm going to say I'm a blogger. I mean, that sounds like I'm, you know, loving hands from home. I don't know. Or I hate the terminology influencer. I mean, really? Who in heaven's name would say that they are an influencer, which means they influence people? It sounds so negative. So I've never known what to call myself. And I was interviewed for a newspaper article, and she asked me, well, what do you say you do? And I'd just been to a conference, and the girl had said she finally figured it out. She tells people that she owns a small media company because she has all her digital media. She has her Instagram, all the social media. She has YouTube, her website. And so that's what I say now. I own a small media company. People are like, really?
That is
and
so
I feel
cool.
A lot more confident. Yeah. Yeah. And
oh,
so of course
great.
I say to this reporter that I own a small, I told the whole story, and my friend's like, yeah, I see you on the, I read the article, I see you on a small media company. I'm like, I told her that I heard it from you at the conference, but none of that made it into the story, but it was pretty funny.
I got to jump in here. I've got to jump in here. I love the way you say you were interviewed. For anyone who's listening,
oh, stop
that
it.
Was the New York Times. Oh, please, the New York Times interviewed you. So exciting. Everyone out there
that was
cheering, Leslie. Yeah.
That was very fun.
Okay.
Okay. Another example of the imposter syndrome is the natural. And the natural assumes that everything should come easily because almost everything in their life has up until now. And a lot of people are very successful in what they do because of who they are, the gift of gab, self-confidence. It just depends on what they do. They're really, really book smart. I mean, there's a lot of reasons for success. But an artist, as an artist, you can be very frustrated by the amount of time it takes to get accomplished and recognized. There aren't too many people who walk up to an easel and start painting and are known as an accomplished artist in the first year. I mean, it just doesn't sadly work that way. But on the other hand, that's why so many artists have worked so hard that they deserve to be successful. So, you know, outside of the art world, I think the natural is the kind of person who's used to excelling without expending perhaps a ton of effort. And I'm not demeaning careers of people who are successful. I'm just saying that it's a hard, it takes a lot of effort and you really have to work hard, and it can be very threatening to someone who's kind of experienced things rather easily. And if it doesn't come easily, then this person who is an artist may think they don't have any talent, and they create art in frustration. And then that of course leads to diminished self-confidence. And it's just a tough job, even for the very best of artists. And it's just something that I don't care what anybody says. It is really hard. And
well, you
I don't
know
a lot of people who it just came easy for.
Haven't you seen this person, like, in your workshops when you're teaching? They get so frustrated, and they sort of want to, like, throw down the brush or the pen because they think, oh, everyone else is so talented, I can't do this. And what
it's funny you say that.
Yeah.
Especially because I teach with a palette knife. And so for a lot of people, it's new. And they're like, why doesn't it look like how you paint it? Why am I not doing that? And I'm like, well, I've been painting here for 4 years and it takes a little while to figure it out. But come on, show some effort. People come to me and they say, they're like, well, I work on my Instagram. I post once a week. I do a blog post once a month. How come I'm not growing like you are? And I'm thinking to myself, well, I work 60 hours a week minimum. And I've been doing this nonstop for 2.5 years. It just doesn't happen like that. It takes a lot of hard work. And people are kind of, it's the whole .com syndrome that everyone's talked about, that when they interview these people who had all this success at a very young age, and they're used to kind of just getting that happening in their life, and they suddenly realize that, oh, wow, not every job's like this, and you aren't going to make all this money because you were at the right place at the right time and did work very hard, but it's very different in the real world. So it's, it's a tough one. But
that
it makes
makes
me a little bit happy. Isn't this sound really mean? It makes me a little bit happy that it's not that easy and people just can't, like, stroll right in and become artists and not do a lot of work.
Well,
because I think artists work so hard.
Or, you know, the other thing I have is people expect, I've had people who, you know, are painting with me or whatever, and they'll say, oh, can you just show me how you did that? And they think there's, like, a secret or a trick. They're looking for the trick to learn to paint.
Right.
And I think, well, sure, spend you know, 20 years and you'll master it. I mean, there's no trick. And so to be frustrated mm-hmm. by that lack of ease, you know, somehow if you're frustrated because it's not coming easy, I think the best advice is you're in the same boat as everyone else and you just need to practice, as it were. You can't play the piano because someone shows you once. I don't know.
Right.
Oh, so
true.
Well, it's a good thing we love what we do. All right, the next category. Let's see if anybody finds themselves in this category of being a lone wolf. The lone wolf prefers to go it alone, and they also prefer to never, ever have to ask for help. You know, they kind of, if they have insecurity or weakness or something they don't know, they will be the last person to admit it. And I have to say, mm-hmm. unless you're a genius, this just isn't going to work for artists. The artists I know, the working artists, are always talking about art, talking about their problems, asking other people if they've encountered it. You know, it's a back and forth, whether it's with, you know, peers or if it's with, you know, someone a great artist you're sitting with. But the loner hates critiques. If it were up to them, they would only hear praise. And then they'd probably have it in the form of an email because they really don't, you know, care to be standing in front of you. I think unless they get praise, this kind of artist just has a tendency to become really frustrated. And sometimes I would suspect they stagnate. This is the toughest sort of personality to deal with. And they often don't even show their work. The loner kind of lacks the confidence to sort of put their work out there for fear of getting sort of any comments at all. And
mm-hmm.
I think we're going to talk about some of the solutions, but I think this is the toughest kind of personality trait to overcome. But I'll let everybody decide for themselves.
No, I totally agree. I'm such
you're,
a people person. when I felt like I was being a loner, I would reach out because I needed that. I needed to be able to talk to people and ask questions and it's tough. But this last one, it makes me laugh because, boy, Margaret, you and I have talked about this, but it's the workshopaholic. And Margaret and I are both firm believers in workshops. I mean, those have been some of the most important times in my art career, whether I was attending a workshop, and I've attended plenty, or being lucky enough mm-hmm. to teach them, because a good workshop can ignite creativity in not only the attendees, but also the instructor, feed creativity to a group of learners, and establish really important peer-artist relationships. And to me, I think that's been probably one of the best things about being an artist was the artists that I've gotten to know. And watching as an instructor, that moment when what you're explaining and that person gets in the it's not as much that they've learned it, and you see the light bulb go off, but when the light bulb goes off and the confidence you instantly see in that person is something that I can never, ever explain, and it is the best feeling ever. Mm. But here's the problem with workshops. There are some artists who have that amazing experience in the workshop, but they begin to think that they can't produce good work outside of a workshop experience. And the problem, too, is kind of exacerbated by the fact that when you're in a workshop and you're learning and you're excited and you've got all these new techniques, you go back into your studio and it's kind of confusing in the beginning because you have one way you've always painted and then you've learned these new techniques. And it's not like you go back and suddenly you're a master. It's like you have to struggle for a couple of weeks figuring out what you want to adapt that you've learned into your everyday painting methods and style. And so it's hard. And I always tell people, don't think you're going to go home and paint great paintings on your own because you're going to be really confused. You don't know what you want to take with you. And it's unfortunate that there's a lot of people who haven't realized that experience has to happen, and they start really only painting when they're attending workshops. And a couple of times I've seen artists who if you look at their repertoire of work, it's like it changes every 2 months, and it starts to look like the instructor. And I think as an artist, you lose your identity and what your style is. And you have to understand the purpose of going to a workshop is to learn and take it home and then apply certain things to your own style. And I think this can be very intimidating. Lose confidence. You think you can't paint on your own, and you feel like, oh wow, I have to go to a workshop in order to paint better.
Yeah.
And you can't lose sight of the fact that it's that experience you have when you get back in your studio that is really what the workshop was about, not just painting while you are.
Yeah, that's where the growth comes. Yeah.
Oh, boy, absolutely.
More.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what do you do when you identified?
Yeah.
What's causing the frustration and the fear of failure? How do you deal with it?
Well,
Margaret,
here we go. I think one way that you can sort of, I don't know what the word I want to use is, validate yourself, you know, your work as an artist, is get out there and look at the work that's being created by others around you. Now, I know that I often say, like, particularly if I lose my, you know, mojo, if I find myself not really being inspired, I've always talked about going to museums. But I have to say, there is such value in going into galleries, because if you hit up the galleries, you're going to see work that's being created now, today. It's in the present.
Mm-hmm.
And, you
mm-hmm.
know, there's also every gallery has usually an artist talk that goes along with the show. What a great way to recognize that every artist has a beginning, and it wasn't usually a particularly easy path. There's something very reassuring and inspiring in seeing someone who is producing work in the same era as we, not, you know, 50 years ago, someone who's working right now, and then hearing them talk about it. And I want to make clear, this is good for you. If you are a realist painter, it's absolutely thrilling to hear someone who's, you know, maybe a multimedia collage producer talk about their work, because the work may look different, but often the process is the same. And this is a real confidence boost, because it starts to show you that every artist goes through these different steps and processes. I think it's really helpful to talk to others and share your thoughts about art. Now, sometimes that can be, you know, I know a lot of artist associations have sort of shared talks and presentations you can do yourself. Whatever it is, don't be Debbie Downer. I think it's very easy to be negative, but I think what I want to share is the positive. Share the work and maybe expose yourself a little. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, if I
yeah.
was to have a mantra today, the mantra I would want is share your work to other artists, because artists are usually really supportive and often much nicer than you think they're going to be when it comes to talking about your art. So I think that's
true.
A huge step.
So true.
Yep.
The next thing you need to do is validate your efforts and claim that title as an artist. There's little things that you can do, like get business cards. It's amazing how when you see that business card, you're like, oh yeah, this is me. It sounds kind of silly, but it's important. It's important to get your act together, so to other people, you're presenting yourself as an artist, not just yourself. Be
yep.
sure that you're doing what you need to do and you're growing and developing yourself. Most artists over time don't paint the exact same way and the exact same thing forever. If you look back at your art when you first started, you want to hope that you have matured as an artist and kind of refined what your style and the direction that you want to take. And that doesn't necessarily mean you're going to go in the same direction. I mean, a lot of us take some drastic right turns and go from painting boats to painting abstract paintings. So you want to make sure that you're also getting the help and the assistance to be better, improving what, and, you know, open your eyes, learn more. And if you don't have a degree in art and you want more training, go get it. There's so many ways to kind of get into that, the groove in adult ed courses, museum courses, library books, workshops, private classes. You can go back to school and get an art degree. And just know that, you know, if you, as you are progressing in this path, you have everyone's permission to call yourself an artist. And hopefully someday you'll be an artist who's selling your work. And there's, it's kind of, I keep saying it's about the journey, but it really is. And it's so hard for me when I see people who are so frustrated because they want to be at a certain place. And I'm like, hey, just enjoy it while you get there. That's what life is. It's not about finishing. It's about getting there. And that's the fun part.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Very true.
Yeah.
All right. Our next point, now we're on the counterpoint. Our counterpoint here is, know that not everyone is born with massive talent. And I really believe this. No amount of talent can make up for a lack of hard work. You know, it doesn't just happen. There's, I guess, every once in a generation, there's someone who is an artistic genius. But really, how many people do you know who get every line, every color, like every value correct? That takes work and practice and experience and a whole lot of looking. Just because you have to put in hard work to improve does not mean that you will never be successful. That, you know, I suspect that there are people who come to art thinking it can't be that hard, I can do this. And they quickly find out that it's easy to be mediocre. But it takes really dedication to be practiced and successful as an artist. I think everyone needs to channel their energies into that practice. As you said, Leslie, enjoy the process. Focus on your work. Don't necessarily, if you're in a class or a workshop, don't look at everyone else's as they're creating, because your measure of success doesn't require your comparison to anyone except yourself. You know, as you said, look back at your early works, look at how you've improved, and kind of relax into it. That's what I would tell everyone. It is amazing. You know, we have talked about daily painting. When someone puts in the time and paints every day, after a month, it is so easy to see a change. After, I can't imagine, after 6 months, I don't think I've ever manage 6 straight months, but I have to tell you, I would love to. And I think my point here is just the work it takes is necessary, but your success can be very measurable.
So true. Absolutely. Okay, this next one is a little bit tough, because if you're a loner and you kind of want to do things on your own, it's a little harder, I think, to grow in isolation. Not all the time, but I think generally speaking, because everyone benefits from the objective opinion of others. And in any job you have got to find someone who's going to give you their opinions in a kind and constructive way. I mean, we all, in so many different walks of life have that person. It's probably not the same person in everything. Who you can just call and say, hey, what do you think about this? And you know they're going to be kind, but you also know they're going to be honest. And it is so important to be able to have that. And when you're an artist, sometimes you don't know if you like it or you hate it. And someone's like, oh, my gosh, that's awesome. And you're like, really? We've all had that. And what you need from that input is you need to be able to see your work from a new perspective. And it kind of gets you accustomed to also talking about your art. What you have to understand is art appeals to people in different ways. And so just because you love it, that may not be the majority of what other people say. And then just because you don't absolutely love it, it you may have the opposite effect where a lot of people do. So you sometimes need that sounding board who's an individual who can give you and just make you sometimes get out of that tunnel vision state, which as artists we're so good at doing, and just be a little bit more objective and maybe more relaxed and looking at things from a different way. And so, and sometimes you're like, oh, wow, where is my focal point in this painting? I was so obsessed with detail or whatever that I kind of lost the big picture. And you just need that gentle reminder from someone else to say, hey, you know, maybe you want to think about this. And I think you need to reach out for that. It's really, really important to find that person or persons.
Yeah. It's funny, you know, one of the best pieces of advice I got was about 2 years ago during one of these portfolio reviews. The guy who, you know, he was a, I don't even know his title, but he worked in developing programs for artists at the Isabella Stewart Gardner Museum, which I know Leslie and I went to. But this fellow looked at my work and said, I think you need to step away and work in another medium for a while. Just give yourself a break. And I came out of there thinking, what? And for whatever reason, I did it. And I have to say, it like recharged my battery. I did printmaking for a couple of weeks. And I was, I was so glad that
That's
I
awesome.
Did. It was like, it was the right piece of advice at the right time. So I'm a big believer in that one. Okay, let's talk about that workshopaholic. Just briefly, I want to say that, you know, workshops are absolutely wonderful, but there comes a time when you should stay in your studio and work, practice, you know, kind of focus on your own thing. A workshop is, again, one of my favorite things to do, but it's not necessary to create art. It can enhance your art. It can sharpen your skills. And if you're a person who says, wait a minute, that's what I love to do and I don't want to do anything more, well, fine. But you need to know that whatever you bring to your easel or your drawing board when you are home alone, it really is enough. There's no yardstick that can measure you. That's the truth. There's nothing that suddenly says, okay, now you are an artist. But I think that limiting the number of voices in your head, which is probably what I would say is the biggest negative side to taking a lot of workshops. You know, too many opinions will just run around like a cacophony inside your brain. I think limiting the number of voices in your head kind of gives you the freedom to have sort of that peace that you get when you are painting and creating something. And for me, often I could live in that moment, you know, when it's, things are going well at the easel. I think everyone needs to know that their art is their own. It's like handwriting. It needs to develop. As you said, you come back and it can be weeks. When you said that, I thought to myself, sometimes it's months for me before I see my own style integrate something from a workshop that works for me. But I think you really need to take a breath and savor what you're doing. So I think my point in all of that ramble was to say sometimes you need to quiet all of the influence in your head and just paint.
Yep. And along those lines, Margaret, there's a lot of people who I think kind of have that fear of failure because they can't get over the fact that they weren't properly trained as an artist.
Oh, it's so
and
common.
And need to get over the envy of credentials. And you can go get those credentials if it's that important to you, but you just need to remember that it's your art that represents you as an artist and not some silly piece of paper. Now, I'm not by any chance saying that having an art degree is not worthy, because there are so many things that I wish I knew that I don't know because I don't have years and years of study. But it is so important to realize that time at your easel and practice right now is the best thing that you can do. So.
It really is. Yep. On the topic of feedback, I just want to say, if you're looking for feedback, get it from a source you respect and write it down. I go back and reread the comments and critiques I've gotten, and I have to tell you, I experience them, I sort of process them in a new way once time has passed.
Mm-hmm.
The value is never diminished by that.
And another way I think of getting confidence is to spend time with other artists. And a lot of times it's those conversations that you have when you discover kind of the universally common themes in the lives of artists, and you realize that, wait, I'm not the only one that goes through that.
Yeah.
when you can hear that and you realize, oh, wow, okay, wow, that person's, you know, amazing. They have their own gallery show and they're suffering that when I'm going through that right now. And it's kind of important to have those kind of common themes and understand that just by sitting and talking with artists can be an incredible experience and a really important experience in your art career.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite things to take away is those conversations. We're running through these quickly now, but I want to say two things that sound like they're sort of contradictions, but I don't believe they are. The first thing is to set some attainable goals. Now, I'm just going to give a quick example, which is I know of an artist who will only apply to the biggest and best shows and is always devastated when she doesn't get in. I think that sometimes it's great to apply to the big and best shows, but sometimes applying to a show where you have a good chance of getting in is a great way of building sort of your confidence and getting you there in the end. So attainable goals, I think, are very worthwhile. And the other side of that is I think you've got to dream big. You know, small gettable goals are great, but dreaming big is how you dare to grow sometimes and track your progress. You know, take a look at whether you're entering art shows and getting accepted, or even if you've never done it, start to show your work online and get feedback there. But whatever it is that appeals to you, I think what I would say today is take the action. Apply to the show. Dream big, but more important than dreaming is doing.
Mm-hmm. So true. Okay, not only do you want to call yourself an artist, and we've talked about that a lot, but engage on social media. I know you're shocked to hear me say this, but the nice thing about social media is it's a way to kind of test the waters. You can kind of share what you're doing. You'll get feedback from people whether you want it or not. But it's kind of a safe way to do it because you get to hide a little bit behind your computer or your phone. You don't have to like be out there in front of people, and you can kind of learn a lot and you can see how people react. And you know, if we all know how this works as an artist on social media, you'll put a painting up, it'll be like, you'll put another one up, people will be like, wow, that's amazing. And it's kind of nice to get that input and kind of understand what the current art world might be looking for. And you can learn so much. But I think it's a really great kind of testing ground to go out there. And don't do it just for the input. Do it so you can have the confidence to show your art. And you can kind of practice that experience on social media so then when you do it in person, you're not going to be terrified. That makes sense.
It's true. It's so easy. It's like easing into that world, that life.
Yeah.
Okay. And this is our final point, which is stop comparing yourself to everyone else. You know, I don't want you to be envious or intimidated, right? Just because someone else is having success doesn't mean you can't or won't. Remember to keep drawing. You know, no one is opening your sketchbook looking at what you're doing, except hopefully you. And if you do have sketchbooks, every now and then take a look back to the early books or the first page of your book, and kind of enjoy that progress that you'll see. I think it's really important to acknowledge to yourself that you're growing, and, you know, kind of be content to know that you are working hard and this is going to pay off. It's, I don't know, this is a pretty wonderful life. It has its downsides, to be sure, but gosh, can you imagine having no creativity at all? I don't know. It wouldn't be half as much
fun. I know.
I
want to say one last point, and that is learn from everything you do and you experience. So if that person, like you said, Margaret, is suddenly having this huge success, don't feel threatened. Don't be jealous. Figure out in your mind, what are they doing that's put them in this position to be successful? Is this the hardest working artist that there is? Learn from it, because so many people are like, oh, I could never do that. They're so successful. And I don't know where I got this from, but I'm always trying to look at a situation to figure out, what can I learn from that? How can I take that situation and make me better in what I do? And I tell you, if you have that outlook, you are going to become successful at a lot quicker rate. And people are like, how did you ever figure out how to grow your Instagram account? And I'm like, because I looked at the people who are kicking it and looked at what they were doing and started doing what they were doing. Because I'm like, I'm not going to reinvent the wheel. I'm going to figure out what these people are doing. And it works. And so learn from everything that's happening around you. Don't instantly be the negative, the fear of failure. Be excited for what they're doing and figure out how the heck they're doing it and learn from that. So that's kind
that's
of
a
my
great
motto
of
the day.
And with that, you just got me all fired up to go paint, so that's a good thing.
I'm in Waco, Texas, and you got me fired up to go yell at my contractor.
Well, what could be more fun? Oh, I love it. Well, you have great success in Texas. Keep posting. We'll keep reading. And
you're so sweet, Margaret.
We'll
thank
see
you.
Next week.
Thank you.
Thank
Leslie.
You. Great, great show. Bye.
Bye-bye.